Welcome to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. I'm Natasha Moore. This week on Life and Faith, we're doing something a little bit unusual. We're talking about a theme that is a bit hard to pin down. I'm calling it extravagance, but really it's more complicated than that. One of the inspirations that got us thinking about this topic was a comment that someone made on our Facebook page a few months ago. We posted a Life and Faith episode that we'd done, where we spoke to a few of the brains behind a new museum currently being built in Washington, D.C., the Museum of the Bible. It's this massive project on a Smithsonian kind of scale, and it's meant to cost about $400 million. And someone wrote this in response.
Surely it is better to spend the time, money, and energy required for this project on putting what Jesus said into practice. What about feeding the homeless on the streets of DC?
Which is a legit question, right? $400 million could alleviate a lot of human suffering. But it's a slippery slope. If we're truly paying attention to the misery and the pain that's going on all around us, near and far away, how can we ever spend money on, say, a pair of nice shoes or an expensive holiday or even our morning coffee when that money could go to feed someone who is starving or cure someone who's dying from a preventable disease? And then what about art? What about museums and parks and cathedrals? How can we spend money on beautiful things or time on things like writing poetry or playing sport when people's basic needs in order to survive aren't even being met? There are a few related and quite complicated ethical questions here. So we're going to do this show in two parts. Next week, we're going to think specifically about beauty and function. How can we justify things like art and culture? But today, we're looking at poverty and luxury. Can we ever justify spending money on ourselves instead of those who plainly need it more than we do?
UNICEF reports that in 2011, 6.9 million children under five died from preventable poverty-related diseases. 6.9 million is 19,000 children dying every day. Does it really matter that we're not walking past them in the street? Does it really matter that they're far away? I don't think it does make a morally relevant difference. What is really important is, can we reduce that death toll? Can we save some of those 19,000 children dying every day? And the answer is, yes, we can.
This is the philosopher Peter Singer giving a TED Talk in 2013 on effective altruism. Effective altruism is a growing movement that aims to change our culture so that we'll give more of what we can spare to charity and so that we'll give more to causes that have been shown by solid research to do the most good to the most people. Back in 1971, in East Bengal, there was a genocide followed by a terrible cyclone in a place that was already very poor. At least 9 million people became destitute refugees. The international community raised some money to help, but not enough. Thousands and thousands of people starved to death. In response, Peter Singer wrote a now famous essay called Famine, Affluence, and Morality. He posed a kind of thought experiment. He wrote, "If I'm walking past a shallow pond and see a child drowning in it, I ought to wade in and pull the child out. This will mean getting my clothes muddy, but this is insignificant while the death of the child would presumably be a very bad thing." So far, everyone would agree, presumably. Singer then goes on to ask, basically, what's the difference between the child drowning in front of you and the millions of children far away who will die just the same if you don't do something to prevent it? Lots of people have been influenced over the years by this essay. One of them is Toby Ord. So he's a philosopher at Oxford, though both he and Peter Singer are originally from Australia. And in 2009, he started the Giving What We Can movement, which asks people to pledge at least 10% of their income over their lifetime. Some people pledge a lot more than that. So far, it has nearly 2,000 members worldwide who've donated more than $15 million and pledged to donate more than $700 million over their working lives. This is all very encouraging. Surely almost all of us could spare more money for charities and probably can agree that we should. But there's also a bit of a black hole here. How can we ever justify spending anything on ourselves beyond the most basic of our needs when there's so much suffering in the world? And how can we justify spending money to help those close to us if the same amount of money would help more people elsewhere? One ethicist put it this way: if your mother was drowning over here and two strangers were drowning over there, and you could save either your mum or the strangers, is Singer really suggesting that you should save the strangers instead? Obviously, there are some knotty ethical problems here, so I'm going to ask Simon Smart and John Dixon to try to solve them for us. Are you guys up for this?
Yeah, this should be pretty easy.
Sure.
Okay, let's try to sum up the ethical dilemmas here in a few questions. So firstly, Simon, John, what do you think of the example that Peter Singer gives? Is there any moral difference between walking past a child who's drowning in a pond because you don't want to get your clothes muddy and allowing children far away to die of preventable diseases because you didn't give away more of your money?
I think he's onto something. And in some ways, it sounds like an echo of the Christian tradition to me.
How so?
Well, Christianity has always called on people to care for the stranger. And that, of course, is the stranger right in front of you. But you have a strong tradition in the New Testament of caring for people miles away. So the Apostle Paul collected money from Gentiles throughout Turkey and Greece for the famine-ravaged people of Judea, whom they'd never met and probably would never meet. Where I get a little bit nervous is in the kind of utilitarian approach to it and a very sort of formulaic numbers approach. These two people outweigh my mum. But I think that's a dehumanizing approach to the ethical dilemma, because my mum has given me so much. I'm formed by her. I'm bound to her in a way that is good and right. And I am to honor her in a way that is above the stranger around me. And that's right, because it's valuing the relationship I have to my mother, which doesn't have to be played off against the strangers whom I also value and care for. And you can't just reduce it to numbers.
Yeah, I think Peter Singer, I'd mostly want to be clapping him, really. He's urging people towards thoughtfulness and generosity to people in great need. And he does it himself. And I think there's a lot to be admired in that. Even 20 or 30 years ago, you could pretty much be ignorant of most of the suffering around the world. But now it's so close. We can see it. It's, you know, it's tweeted every minute. And so we have less of an excuse to be at least aware of the suffering of other people. And so I think what Singer's urging you towards is mostly a good thing.
I have a slight philosophical, parenthetical debate with Singer, which
Oh, yes.
Can maybe just sit by the side. And that is, his entire argument for caring for the person right in front of you, or anyone, is the feeling of empathy that has evolved in the human being. That's the basis of morality. There isn't any higher law calling us to do this. It's the empathy that one feels. And I just want to raise the question, if the feeling of empathy that has evolved in me toward the child I see right in front of me and all those chemical reactions that take place, if that's the basis of morality, then he doesn't actually have a way of grounding my care for the person I don't see who's suffering, because by definition, my instincts aren't aroused by what I can't see. And if those instincts are the basis of the effort to care, you don't have a reason to care. So, but that's philosophical and parenthetical. I don't want to take away from what Simon says, that I think his instincts, I would say, are actually Christian instincts, and they're to be applauded.
Yeah, as much as he won't acknowledge that.
Of course not.
Yeah.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith, and we're talking about extravagance or luxury or utilitarianism. It's kind of hard to say what we're talking about. You'll pick it up as we go. Another conundrum then, getting more to the heart of this utilitarian thinking. One of the examples that Peter Singer uses in his TED Talk is about the effective part of effective altruism. He says that to provide a guide dog for a blind person, it costs about $40,000 to train one guide dog. It costs between $20 and $50 to cure a blind person in a developing country if they have trachoma. That means that for the same amount of money, you can help out one blind person in a developed country, or you can cure between 400 and 2,000 people elsewhere. Singer says, I think it's pretty clear what the better thing is to do. Discuss.
Yeah, I get a bit nervous when he starts to talk in this way. And we mentioned utilitarian thinking, the sort of, you know, the greatest good for the greatest number. But there's many limitations and problems with that, not the least being we're not always great judges of what our action will actually do. And so that sort of calculus where you would actually deny one person your compassion because you imagine that some other action will do some sort of greater good does seem a bit dehumanizing to me.
But this is a pretty clear, like someone will be cured of blindness. That is a good, and it's going to cost a lot less than, I mean, the problem with this thinking really is that we would never provide guide dogs for blind people if this is the case.
Well, that's right. Who's going to be the one to say to the local blind person, look, we've decided some other calculus is going to mean that you get nothing, but we can heal a whole lot more people in Africa.
The other reality is there's more than enough money in the world to do both. So each individual faced with this in the West has to think, okay, well, I do want to help the absolute poor. Does that mean I give everything to them and nothing to Guide Dogs Australia? I don't think so, because I want to be a responsible human being in the place God has called me. Now, this is something Peter Singer doesn't have up his sleeve, and all he's got really is evolutionary empathy, to throw that little quip in. Whereas a Christian has evolutionary empathy, of course, but also a whole matrix view of the world that makes compassion reasonable. And one of the factors a Christian has to bring in is, where has God called me? And what does it mean to be faithful as someone who lives where I live, surrounded by people with needs right around me? I can't deny their needs on grounds that my money would go further elsewhere. I want to do both.
Okay, one more question, and this is kind of related to that idea of where am I called, what am I called to do? The co-founder of the Giving What We Can movement, a philosopher called Will McCaskill, he founded a brother organization called 80,000 Hours. It's meant to help altruistically minded people think about the hours of their working lives and how they can do the most good with it. So the idea, put a little bit crudely, is that maybe you shouldn't go and work for a charity if what you really want to do is help people. You should actually become an investment banker because you'll earn far more money that you can then give away. So becoming an aid worker might be personally satisfying for you, but you'll be able to help far more people by making loads of money. What do you guys think?
No, it seems very reductionist to me. It doesn't allow for different natures, the way we're wired up differently, the way John could do, so be who he is in a way that serves other people, and I could do it and it's a different thing. I mean, we all know that if I became a merchant banker, that wouldn't be good for anyone, because I'm just not wired up that way. A different way of thinking would be that you sort of see the way in which God has called you into the world to be a blessing to other people. I think you can do that in huge, that's what's wonderful about this, right? You can do that in a huge range of different ways that kind of honors who every person is. And this sort of equation that you've given us, maybe again well-intentioned, but it does feel a bit cold to me.
It unravels 2,000 years of Christian influence on the West is what it does, because the Greeks and Romans had a very fixed idea of everyone in their place doing not the thing they are called to do, but the thing that external conditions force upon them. And this is just another version of that, whereas Edwin Judge, the great historian, will point out that one of the gifts of Christianity to the West is the idea that each individual has been called by God to a particular expression of gifts in the world, and that it is a fundamental good to express those gifts where you are, according to how God's wired you, for the good of others.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, John. I'd have to say too, I wouldn't want us to sound like we're discouraging this sort of effort to get people to be more generous and thoughtful. And gosh, if even a few people started taking these guys seriously, I think they'd be a working towards something better. But it is worth thinking about what lies at the foundation of this.
Well, maybe there's no one answer to this moral dilemma, and maybe the answer will look very different for different people. And, you know, if lots of different people are working for different goods, maybe there's more chance of good things being achieved. So we're not done with this topic by a long way. I'm Natasha Moore. We've been talking today on Life and Faith about poverty and luxury. Is extravagance always wrong? Next week, I'll be asking John and Simon a few more curly questions along these lines. So this time with a focus on beauty and function. How can we justify human pursuits like art and culture that aren't useful per se? Join us then to continue this conversation.